Did you just, what just happened?
I called you.
Oh, you called me like a half second after I called you, and then it like, it hung up on my call, and then it says call no answer. Anyway.
Oh, well, I was waiting for a bit, and I was like, I don't know if he saw my message, so I'll just call you for once. Because usually I wait for you to call me.
Well, yeah, we clicked the button at the same time, but yours did the thing, and mine didn't do the thing.
Sorry. I think that's what they call a race condition.
What?
Sure. So... Hello.
Actually, probably what it was is before I hit dial, I thought about the movie again and I started laughing to myself. And just, oh boy.
Oh dear. So
parents just don't understand, Joe.
Yeah, okay, so
your jerks are gonna miss me when I'm gone.
To bring everyone up to speed, we have the Jill and Brewery thing that is still going on. Checks calendar, because obviously it's still February, and we definitely have not had to wait to release this one because it is not late at all.
Yeah, we just wanted to make sure we had the appropriate time to really, really put in the necessary and deserved effort and respect that this movie deserves, so we can do it justice. Or I don't know.
Well, see, okay, okay, Dan, I'm gonna harp on this point a little bit because
It's not your fault. I don't blame you.
I warned you. I tried to be very specific about my criticisms about where this was going to wind up going.
Specific, you focused very heavily on the fact that people in college were really into this movie, and that's partly why it's hard to be into this movie, and also because there's a lot of depth that's not really there, but like for I don't know, 20-year-olds, it's really deep or something.
Yeah, I mean this is fake deep. This is incredible.
There's no depth to it. It's just
that's why I said fake deep. It's
stupid.
It's trompe l'oeil. It's a
Gesundheit.
No, it's a French word for a painting thing when you make it look like there's stuff in three dimensions, but it's really just flat.
You went highbrow on it. That was pretty good.
Did you not remember what trompe l'oeil was?
I don't have a traditional arts education.
Oh.
I have a media arts education.
Well, see, I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts, which is a liberal arts degree, which means I got to fall asleep in an arts history class. So,
Yeah, my bachelor's program was in the College of Industrial Design. So, no. Sorry, Industrial Technology, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no history of art there. There's history of color science, which isn't really a history. Just numbers.
So wouldn't it be numbers of color science? Or the math of color science?
Yeah, it's...
Oh.
It was just color theory, color science. This is okay. Matrices. It's not complicated.
All right. Well, if you ever want to look at slides of fertility dolls, I have a course you could take.
Nice. Yeah.
No, so anyway...
Did you have any science teachers that you could ask questions about time travel?
No. I know. Certainly none like Noah Weil, but is it Weil or Wiley?
I think it's Wiley.
Okay, so you do pronounce the E?
I think so. I mean, he was on ER. I feel like I pronounced it back then.
Hmm. Okay. I can't ever remember.
Did you watch ER?
I did. I was not a huge ER fan. Of course, I love him in The Pirates of Silicon Valley, one of our favorite movies.
I forgot that was him.
He was Steve Jobs.
That's right. Are you a virgin? I really like the theme song to ER. That was a good theme song. I'm trying to remember right now. It was very dramatic.
Yeah, it was like lots of beats and like noises and things. It was very mid-90s.
Can you hear it?
We'll put an edit point there. No, but he's in this. There are a lot of actually larger names than you would think in this.
Which... Yeah, there was. I have a question about Noah Wiley and the other person who you might bring up being what's her name? I already forgot her name. Drew Barrymore. When he like walked her to the quad and then like walked away, I thought he was dropping her off as a student. I'm like, oh my god, is she supposed to be like a young person and they're just gonna like pass her off as, hey guys, look at me, I'm a high school student too. It's like no,
it's a different Drew Barrymore movie.
That's the other, yeah, it's the other Drew Barrymore.
No, she has a very small role, but she is a producer on this, which is why a lot of the things happen in this, and also why it actually got a theatrical release. It was going to be direct to home video, believe it or not.
I believe it.
she pulled some strings. I imagine
it's probably also why the I think it stated in her contract that they have to cut to her at least twice in every scene, just even if she's not talking.
Well, supposedly, okay. So there are two cuts of this movie.
Nope.
I'm not gonna make you watch the other one.
I'm not gonna watch the other one.
But the other one, there's some more Drew Barrymore and some more of other ancillary characters having moments. In fact, there's 20 more minutes of the film. But what you see here is kind of trimmed down to the bare minimum Drew Barrymore. The Drew Barry minimum.
There could be way less Drew Barrymore. There could be way less, a lot of stuff in this.
Yeah, I know, but I think this is what she, you know, in order for her to be satisfied as producer on this and to get its theatrical release, I'm sure this is as little of her as you could probably have. Because she also has what little remains of what she's doing. It has no real connection to anything that's happening in the film. You're watching stuff at the end of the picture where she's having that aside with the principal, and he's like, "Oh, it's not working out. This is going to be your last week. You know, it's over." And then she goes outside and she screams the F word, and turns around and there's the other kid there, and she smiles.
Actually, I take it back. If the director's cut explains why the hell that other girl with the earmuffs was in this movie, then maybe I would be curious to watch it, but she doesn't need to be there either.
There's more in the director's cut. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I will briefly summarize the main differences. The director's cut has some music cue differences. Songs are swapped around in a couple spots, and like NXS has a track that's used for the opening instead of the one that's used there, and then that one's shifted to somewhere else in the movie. It doesn't really super matter. They also weave the book into the movie earlier because they start using title cards based on the chapter names from the book. So the book seems more connected to what's actually happening rather than something introduced 50 minutes into the film.
Is it? Just by way of title cards, or is there...
Oh, no, it's just by way of title cards.
No,
there's more effects of things, like liquidy, force-filled-y stuff that you love.
More abyss effects?
Yeah, that's in there. But overall, the story is the same. A lot of people prefer that version because they think it makes more sense because it... fleshes out characters that are briefly on screen, and it puts an emphasis on the book earlier, so when you finally get the book in the movie, it seems like it's actually important rather than just some random thing that's happened.
I'm not sure that's the case, but are there a bunch more things in the director's cut?
No, I mean, there's 20 minutes of stuff, just more stuff. But
well, anything else you want to highlight before I ask a question?
No, because there's nothing in it that necessarily would have improved your experience of watching this film. So,
right, okay. Well,
we will not dwell on it, but I know that the question will come up as to which version you watched.
Yeah.
And I've seen both versions now. I'd only seen the director's cut first, and I'd never seen the theatrical cut until we were watching... we were trying to decide whether or not we were going to invest heavily in purchasing this for like $16 each, or watch the version that's on Netflix.
Do that,
yeah. Which is the theatrical one. So yeah, the theatrical one While a lot of people might be disappointed and go, oh no, Dan didn't get the full whatever experience, I as someone who's seen both, I don't think that in any way this would sway Dan's opinion if he had seen the other one.
Listen, I went to film school.
Did you know?
I did. I watched a lot of people's really bad movies with actors that don't know how to say words and cameras that move like some guy was just carrying it like a football and ran down a hallway. So I don't think I need to see any more of that. But like you said, it's 20 minutes longer, but you said it's the same story. And my question for you is, what's the story? What happens in this movie? Is it supposed to be mysterious, open-ended, interpret your own kind of ending kind of crap, or am I supposed to actually get something out of this movie?
Am
I supposed to get something out of this movie?
You're not supposed to. Okay, you're not supposed to. You specifically aren't supposed to get anything extra out of this. But what's happening is there is a little bit of a time loop paradox thing that happens. And because of that little wrinkle, Donnie Darko has these 28 days where he should have died but didn't. And then at the end, he rectifies that by dying, and the loop doesn't happen. And that also means that the people who were dead or dying or at risk of death at the end of the picture are not in that situation anymore.
Frank Boy and the girl, right?
Well, and also Rose's plane is on her way back from LA. Like, that plane is the one that the engine falls off of.
Right.
Yes.
So his mom and sister died too, yeah, theoretically.
Right. So by dying, by sacrificing himself in the time vortex, whatever loop thing, then everybody else lives. But we experienced this other timeline that will never have happened. Those 28 days don't exist. So all the things that he did, Patrick Swayze's uncovering, etc., all that stuff doesn't happen. It doesn't exist. It's just something that he did in an alternate timeline that no one will ever witness.
Well, if it didn't happen, why is Patrick Swayze crying at the end?
I don't know. That's the thing is, like, he dies with the jet engine thingy majig, and everybody else is alive. Ta-da. Like I said, this is...
I want to ask questions about the mechanics of what you just said with the time vortex and the loop, but I don't think there's going to be any satisfactory answer to them.
No, there isn't, because it's all made up. Richard Kelly, the writer-director of this, made up his own rules for time travel and how things work.
Right, but they even explain it, too. Like, you need a vehicle traveling near the speed of light, and then you need a wormhole, but... And there's a part where he goes, like, I have the potential to, like, build a time travel device, but I don't know if I should do it or whatever. But, like, he didn't do anything. He just, like, didn't leave his room.
Yes.
He didn't do anything.
Right.
He, like, laughed.
Yeah.
In his bed, presumably while he was reading the book. It kind of looked like he was reading the book, but we didn't see him reading the book because... I don't know, that would have been a useful shot to get or something.
Well,
and then
he couldn't have been reading the book because he didn't have the book when the jet engine originally...
Well, when did it loop back officially?
Remember the start of the film?
Yeah.
When the jet engine crashed into the
home? No, but he's like smiling and laughing in bed before the jet engine hits him.
Yeah, but he doesn't get the book until much later in the film from that.
Right, but at the end there, when he's laughing and smiling in bed, before it hits him, that's the beginning of the loop again, but how did he get back to the beginning of the loop?
Doesn't matter, Dan.
I've taken my glasses off. I don't want to look at anything. So, I don't get it. I don't care about it either, I guess. I don't know.
I really saw this coming, and
I mean, we can start. Yeah. We can start breaking down like nitty gritty details, and we can talk about some things that worked better than other things. But I don't see this movie for anything other than a kid trying to explain to parents that his feelings are very important, and he's a very smart person, and you got to take me seriously because I'm almost an adult now, and I'm as important or more important than anyone else in this family because I see things that you don't see, and you just don't understand me or believe me, Mom and Dad, and you'll miss me when I'm gone, and I'm gonna, because I'm really good, and I'm gonna sacrifice myself for everyone else, and I'm misunderstood and stuff.
Yeah. See, this is what I was getting at when I was describing the immaturity of this as something that seems...
There's literally a scene where he curses at his mom and says, get out of my room. Like, that's the whole movie is that scene.
Basically. I was trying to appropriately set expectations for this.
I don't know how I
haven't done that.
How old was he when he wrote this movie? Because it came out when he was 25.
I have no idea. I don't know how long it took him to write and make this.
You think it was kicking around in his typewriter for a couple of years? So maybe early 20s when he wrote it?
I would assume so, yes. Mm. And he was somewhat set on the time period that he wanted to have it take place in, which seems... specifically linked to certain things he might have been seeing or feeling when he was growing up, because it's
you're talking about like high school stuff time period?
Yeah, I mean, the movie is like set in 1988.
Oh yeah, that's the other, I didn't pay attention to any of that because it doesn't matter.
Right, well, this movie was made in 2001, so it was a peculiar choice when they were doing it to make it a period piece for no particular reason.
It's also not very helpful because all the title cards are like October 2nd. I'm like, I don't know what that means. Then like by the third title card, they're like 15 days remaining. I'm like, okay, that's helpful because I don't remember when we started, when we're ending, or whatever.
I mean, it's not that complicated. There's 28 days.
What's the start date?
I don't remember the first card.
That's what I'm saying.
But I mean, in the context of things, all you need to know is that time is moving forwards. That's what the title cards are for.
Time is a flat circle.
No, it's... I mean, ugh. But...
Time is a circle as flat as Jenna Malone after getting run over by a car.
Oh, that's in poor taste. Too soon.
That was so bad. I legitimately laughed out loud when that happened. I'm like, what? Why did you just do that?
I have to say too that what's his face and Seth Rogen as threatening
what the
hooligans.
Hell was that? Like, I got a bigger knife now that I'm also not going to cut you with. That scene was like so. They're trying to like be menacing or something. Like you think maybe he's gonna harm Donald Darkowitz, but he is not. He's just going to pin him to the ground and put a large knife to his neck.
Yep. And he doesn't even do a good job at that. It's mostly angled away from his head the entire time.
Jake Gyllenhaal's coughing in that bathroom scene where the kid puts the knife against his throat is better acting than that kid did in the entire movie.
Yeah.
He's like, it's like super stressed out and coughing and red-faced, and the kid didn't do anything. He like grabbed him by the side of the head and like put a knife up to him. Like he didn't do it. He didn't cause him any physical harm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know why those kids were in the movie. They should have been cut out.
Well, they're there because you need to have the hilarious misunderstanding and situation, which causes us to actually find out who Frank is, which is...
it's like Halloween-ish almost, right? Or somebody just like tried to steal Donnie's candy and like pushed his girlfriend into the street?
Yeah, this is basically Halloween, and that's why Frank is inside of a bunny costume,
weird bunny costume.
In the course of the film, makes no sense up until that point, and then it's like, oh yeah, Halloween, and he kills Gretchen, Jenna Malone, and Jake Gyllenhaal uses the gun that he got from his dad in the weird pseudopod sequence and then shoots Frank in the eye.
We were just supposed to assume that ever since he finds it in the movie, he's carrying it around with him the whole time.
I suppose. He's the one who shoots Frank, and when we see all of the things of Frank as a bunny, and then in the theater when he takes off the bunny head thing, and it's just a guy with a bloody eye, and we don't understand what has happened, then you find out at the end, oh, it's because Jake Gyllenhaal had shot him, and that's how he came to be that way through this. Now, I don't know why him doing that caused Frank specifically to ripple back in time as opposed to, say, Jenna Malone's character, who was also killed at nearly the same time.
Mm.
Other and than also, he was killed by his hand.
Right. And I guess all of those scenes where they're hanging out on a hill shooting bottles or whatever is sort of meant to teach us that he's a good shot and he's familiar with guns and isn't afraid of them or something.
I guess.
Because his two friends are very stupid. Like when they're like,
yeah.
Now that you're a big man on campus because you didn't die from a thing that crashed into your room, you better have a smoke, dog. It's good stuff, right? Like the best line in that whole scene is Gyllenhaal literally just going, "It's just a cigarette." Like, what are you talking about?
Him and his friends are most notable, of course, for their Smurfs scene, where they're discussing the sexual activities of Smurfs.
You know, as I may have mentioned, I went to film school. I believe I wrote a scene similar to that where people are discussing the interpersonal relationships of the Scooby-Doo characters, because I was just looking for literally anything for two dumb high school characters to talk about. And that's basically just what it usually devolves into.
Oh, cartoon sex.
I don't think it was sex necessarily, but I think it was just like, I honestly couldn't tell you the context. It was as dumb as their Smurf thing, but it wasn't literally whether or not they were asexual.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about Snorks for a second.
Man, Snorks are pretty dope. I can't believe nobody pivoted to Snorks in this discussion about Smurfs.
Well, Snorks, it gets complicated because Snorks were Hanna-Barbera's competing thing for Smurfs, which was a Ruby Spears thing, but then Hanna-Barbera bought Ruby Spears, so I don't know. I don't know how that all panned out. I don't remember the 80s well enough to discuss their cartoons. But it's one of the notable, I guess, scenes in the film for some people, is this discussion.
Did you say notable?
For people, if you talk about Donnie Darko, some people will bring up this scene. Now, I don't particularly gravitate towards this scene.
I mean,
but some people are really enamored with this discussion, and they think that it is so amazing, but it is not.
The sparkle motion gif that you put in the tweet is pretty good, and then the hungry, hungry hippos thing. Those are moments that I would remember about this.
Yeah, no, I doubt your commitment to sparkle motion is probably the only line from this movie that I quote, just because it's such a ridiculous thing, and while I have a lot of criticisms about this movie. Very spiritual-ish, but high earner horse kitty character, who is the coach at the school. She is very interesting and funny, I think. Intentionally so, that we are meant to mock her. So I don't necessarily harbor any ill feelings towards that, but she is, of course, ultimately inconsequential to the plot of this film. It's just something that Richard Kelly wanted to make fun of, so he makes fun of this character.
I mean, you talk about things that are inconsequential to the plot. Really, this same, like, the only thing that matters is the fact that he finds and reads the book and then dies.
Yeah.
Everything else is just unnecessary. Like, so he has his imaginary friend who has him go do all these things that seem crazy but turn out to be potentially good things. Like, he exposes Patrick Swayze. I don't know what the good thing was about flooding the school or whatever, but like, none of that mattered because he wiped it clean. And also I don't know. It just wasn't really that important.
No, and flooding the school didn't do much, except it is what got him to talk to Gretchen.
Right.
Because he's walking back from school and passes everybody else and says, school's flooded. And then they're going to walk home. He's going to walk her home. And they have their conversation, and that kindles their relationship.
Their fake precocious conversation, which is so just excruciating to watch. It is
MTV scripted reality show level bad.
It's so bad, and the problem is it's shot as like basically a one shot, so you can't cut around the bad. I don't know, like maybe you could have replaced some of the dialogue, but the stilted timing and the weird like awkwardness, it legitimately looks like a rough cut, which is again what a lot of student movies look like.
I mean, this is basically a student movie. I mean, Richard Kelly was not mature or experienced in the world, but he thought he had everything he needed, and then he made this, and it's about a character that thought he had everything he needed, and that thought he was mature and thought he was wise. And you can look at that like we are through our lenses of, oh, you idiot. There were people who would be at that same sort of age level who would be like, yeah, man, that's how I feel. I feel like all the adults are keeping me down. You know, and that's relatable for some. I can't respond to that on this level, because he just looks like an idiot. And he does buffoonish, ridiculous things, and insists that he's correct about all kinds of random stuff. Also, his social hierarchy leanings and where he fits into the school make no sense to me. People are cheering him on when he's acting out at rallies and or whatever that auditorium thing was. But he seems to be kind of a loner, and then so he has like this weird popularity, not popularity thing happening, which is inexplicable. It's only the sort of thing that someone who wanted to be liked would write, but wasn't actually liked. So he writes a character who wasn't actually liked, but just puts in scenes where people like him and respond to him. So anyway, Richard Kelly is basically Donnie Darko in the film, of course, and you're witnessing sort of a weird sense of a weird wish fulfillment thing about how he wishes he could have spoken up or acted out in his school classes and stuff.
Did you know there was a sequel?
No.
It's what's about, the sequel? It's about his sister. It's called S. Darko from 2009.
Did Richard Kelly do it too?
Directed by Chris Fisher. No, I was just I was listening and agreeing with everything you were saying, and then also kind of reading the critical reaction section of the Wikipedia page, and I discovered that Roger Ebert gave the theatrical version 2.5 out of 4, and the director's cut 3 out of 4 stars, and I'm very saddened by that. And there are a lot of very positive quotes in here about the reception of this, and I don't know, man.
I told you, Dan. There were a lot of people who thought it was a big deal at the time, and that's one of the reasons why you wanted to watch it, of course, because you've heard so much about this film.
I haven't heard that much about it. I've heard that people have watched it, and it has been a touchstone for people. I haven't really heard anything particularly about it, but it's a movie that thinks that by adding all of some sort of perfunctory mention of all of these different themes of science fiction and spirituality and fate and love and acceptance and all of these things together, that they somehow create some sort of cohesive feeling, and they absolutely do not. If anything, the addition of all of these different themes detract from the other themes, because none of it really meshes, and you're just like, oh, I guess we're talking about God's plan now versus just, you know, Einstein wormholes and time loops and stuff.
Yeah, the God stuff is a weird insert, because
like his school is like a religious school or something, right?
It's unclear. They have uniforms, and they seem to lean heavily on this love-fear pseudo-whatever garbage. Mm. But it's not... What Patrick Swayze is peddling is not specifically of a particular religion.
Right, but the uniforms... I didn't personally go to Catholic school, but I have family members who did. The uniforms, mm-hmm. and then that thing where they put the brown paper over the covers of their books and so they can, like, doodle on them and keep them clean or whatever, that's also a Catholic school thing.
No, I mean, we did that at public school, Dan.
I didn't do that.
We had to put book covers on.
That's weird. Why'd you do that?
Because we had books that we would have to turn in at the end of the year, and you had to keep the quality of the books up, so you had to put book covers on.
Yeah, we didn't do any of that.
Really?
No, oh. We did not.
I guess Florida just values its education so much more than Arizona.
Maybe it's a humidity thing. Maybe it's a humidity thing. You got to keep the books properly humidified.
Yeah, they retain so much water, which is great for the weight of carrying those things on your back. But
how many people wrote Donnie Darko on their cover?
I'm going to guess zero people, since the movie was not out when I was in high school.
The Earmuffs girl, she wrote Donnie Darko on her book and then, like, yelled at him and ran away.
Mm-hmm.
So she liked him, we think, but we don't know.
Yes. No, she definitely liked him. That was one of the things. She likes him. She has a crush on him, presumably just for physical reasons, because why else? And that is also one of those weird things at the beginning of the film when Drew Barrymore is like, you know, you have to sit next to whoever you think is the most attractive guy in here, whoever you think is the hottest guy in here.
It makes no sense. It's so creepy.
It is a very strange scene. The only thing that makes me laugh is when she tells the other girl to get up and move. She has such contempt for her.
One of the issues with this, like, if they were going to lean a little more heavily into the whole, like, these 28 days are fake / not happening / surreal because you should have died, but you get, like, an extra little blip of time, like, they could have made it weirder without, like, trying to tie it all together with some sort of strange sciency stuff and, like, faith stuff. Like, they could have just made it really surreal and screwed up and then, like, tied it back together at the end as the loop, like, unbeknownst to the characters, because, again, the characters really had no effect on the loop. So I don't know, like, it's too in the middle of, like, he's in control but he's not in control, and he's schizophrenic but he's also just really smart and people don't understand him.
Yeah.
It's not a nothing burger. It's an everything burger, which tastes like a nothing burger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somehow you can just put every ingredient in the kitchen in, and it doesn't taste very good.
I did that one time.
Who would have thought?
When I was like, I feel like when I was like 10 years old, I tried to make my own hot sauce out of, like, I mixed everything. I mixed salsas and hot sauces and jalapenos and, like, other peppers and other spices and stuff that we had. I mixed all of it together, and I like let it mix and put it in the fridge overnight. And the next day it tasted like nothing. It was just, like, all mixed together. It had, like, no flavor. And I was, like, dumbfounded. That's this movie. It's a homemade salsa.
When I was a kid, I tried to make breakfast, and I was gonna do a good job because I was gonna make scrambled eggs, but I messed up because I thought what I had seen my mom do with French toast, where you beat the egg and then you put the vanilla extract in it, and then you dip the bread in, etc. I did that for the scrambled eggs, where I thought you had to put the vanilla in. And my mom was not happy.
You made vanilla scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
What did it taste like?
Oh, it tasted awful.
Did it taste like vanilla eggs?
It tastes like vanilla eggs, but because it's scrambled, and I did a hard scramble on these because I was a small child and did not understand the importance of a soft scramble. These are hard scrambled. So it had that very well done egg texture and flavor plus vanilla.
It was dry, basically.
Yeah. And there was no sugar in it because I also messed that up. So it was just incredibly bizarre. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. And then at another time, when I was really little, even younger than that, when I was like six, I thought I would make muffins, and I wasn't sure what flavor of muffin I wanted to make, so I grabbed grape Kool-Aid, and I made grape Kool-Aid muffins, which basically just had flour, water, and grape Kool-Aid. And those,
you put the grape Kool-Aid in the batter.
Yeah, they did not really rise as much as you would think from just being flour and water and.
I bet it rose exactly as much as I would think.
And they tasted terrible.
You should have put pop rocks in there. That would add some extra leavening to it.
Yeah. No, I learned valuable lessons from these culinary exploits.
As my eyes have wandered across the computer screen in front of me, I have discovered that a stage adaptation of this movie appeared in 2007.
Oh dear, how'd that do?
I don't know. It doesn't have any links, so I assume not very well. At least the sequel has links. Who is this Chris Fisher who directed this?
I don't know.
Night Stalker, Dirty Chuck, Cold Case, Street Kings 2, Meeting Evil. I don't know any of those.
Okay, that was fascinating. See, the important thread to really pick out of this is Richard Kelly. He went on to do Southland Tales after this. And
I saw that in there. What is that?
Also bad. I've never seen it. And no, anyone listening, I'm not going to do it. And I don't think anything about this experience would lead Dan to do
this either. Oh, it's got The Rock and what's his name in it? It's that's why you would know it.
And Sarah Michelle Gellar. There are a lot of people in it, actually.
Sure. I mean, after you saw the amazing magic he worked with Donnie Darko, why wouldn't you want to be in his next movie?
It was a hotly anticipated thing, and it was going to be a big deal, and a lot of people were very excited about it. And I think you could probably count on one hand the number of people who are actually really big fans of this movie.
I don't understand how IMDb works here, because you would think the top list in the cast would be The Rock and Sean William Scott, but they're not even in the top 20 people listed here. I don't understand how this works. Maybe they just didn't want their name on it.
I don't know if that's a service that IMDb provides, but anyway.
Alan Smithy, how many credits does Alan Smithy have on IMDb?
Probably a lot.
Oh my God, this guy. Richard Kelly. His IMDb photo has to be from the Donnie Darko era.
Oh, I've never looked at a photo of Richard Kelly.
His haircut is very 1997. Oh, he looks more normal later.
Okay.
He could be a cousin of Zack Snyder.
I mean, he just looks like a
dude.
I was going to say something else that starts with a D, but...
dude, bro? Yeah.
Sure.
A down-to-earth say it was fella? That.
It was definitely not that, but sure. Definitely that.
Mm. Did you know his younger sister in the movie is the chick from The Ring?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Mm, interesting. Did you ever see The Box?
The Box? No, what's that?
That was that movie with Cameron Diaz and Frank Langella, where there's a box and you're not supposed to push the button.
Oh, you push the button and somebody dies, but you get $1 million or whatever?
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah.
27 Dresses Boy, and then you got the guy with the... He's got the thing on his face.
Yeah. This is apparently the last thing he did, 2009.
Oh, this is also a Richard... I was going to say Richard Scarry, Richard Kelly book. Thing, writing, script, whatever you call them.
Yes, book. He did the novelization before he did the movie. No, he didn't. Yeah, he wrote and directed it. But yeah, he really hasn't done anything since then.
I mean, you know,
basically just living off of the vast success of Donnie Darko.
Well, he did Domino. Domino was
sales
kind of biggish, wasn't it?
I don't know. I never saw it.
Tony Scott directed it, so.
Mm. Was it any good?
I didn't see it. It's very, you know how he had that look that he did in Man on Fire?
No.
Did you not see Man on Fire?
No.
Oh my god, that like hand cranked sort of crazy film look thing that Tony Scott did in Man on Fire. Anyway, he did that like to 13 in this movie. It's like crazy stylized, yeah, I never saw it, but it's crazy looking. I like Tony Scott.
Okay. Yeah, no, he's not done anything else. So that concludes our talk about the movie, and that was 40 minutes.
Mm.
It was really entertaining. Well, I mean, what else you got to say about the movie, Dan?
I mean, there's a lot we could say about the movie. No, I don't know what I want to say about the movie. I'm struggling.
So then that's what I'm saying. We're done. We're not going to tease that out.
What are the important themes about this movie that that you carry forward into your daily life?
Nothing.
Hmm.
And like I said, we were done talking about the movie. If you want to talk about something else, we can talk about something else now. Yeah, this is the something else portion.
No, it's all mixed and match. We'll circle back if something comes up.
Yeah. No, but let's talk about some other exciting things that have happened in the world. Like
where are you going
films.
the film awards that recently occurred.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd your ballot turn out?
I don't do that.
I thought about it this year, but I didn't do it.
The only thing that I predicted, but I didn't write it down anywhere, so I can't really say that I predicted it, was that Blade Runner 2049 would have been for visual effects.
Yeah, I predicted that too. I also didn't write it down, but nobody knows that, so we just write it down on a piece of paper right now and be like, look, I predicted it.
Yeah. Try carbon dating that. You won't be able to successfully determine that it wasn't true. But
After the blackout, all of our data is stored in crystal thingies now up in satellites. So.
And I know a lot of people are like, but War of the Planet of the Sour Grapes should have won. And I'm like, no, I don't.
Did people go see that movie?
I never saw it. I'm not criticizing the visual effects that were in it, but a lot of people will seem very bent out of shape about Blade Runner winning.
Well, when was the last time the third movie in a trilogy won for best anything?
No. But
I'm sure it's different than the other ones, but they're doing the same thing for the third time. Like, it's not going to blow people's socks off.
Well, but this is also sometimes Oscars are sometimes Academy Awards, are awarded for I would say past efforts rather than current efforts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Martin Scorsese, best director for The Departed.
Yeah, sometimes people are just like, you know what? They deserve it. And it's like, but did they really do anything this year? And it's like, no, but they did all the other stuff. So it's their turn, you know, give it to them. So there's a possibility it could have been it could have been Grape Ape. But I just see no problem at all with Blade Runner winning for what they did. I think that they did a very good job in terms of execution.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times people in our field can overlook execution and they'll just be like the scope of it.
I had forgotten about this. Like I was like you, I was thinking like, I think Blade Runner will probably win this one. But then when they showed the little highlight reel right before when they were announcing the nominees, I had forgotten about Hologram Girlfriend and stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, there was a lot of really good work in there too. So from a technical perspective. So that like solidified it in my head that it was going to win.
Yeah, no, there's a ton of character work in there. And while there is a digital human being, which I feel like the Academy Awards, voting body generally reacts negatively towards, there was very little of it in comparison to everything else. So I think that they probably responded well to just the fact that it was able to execute that world and make you feel like you were inside of it. So I'm not surprised by it. And I think kudos to them. Mm-hmm. A+.
Yeah. Plus, you know, filmy nerds are, titillated and aroused by the concept of Blade Runner more than anything else, so that's another.
Yeah, but I would say working against it, Blade Runner 2049 was not positively received in the box office, and while many outlets may have written up favorable reviews, it was not a crowd pleaser by any stretch of the imagination.
It pleased me.
You will note it was not up for Best Picture, but...
Well, it shouldn't have been up for Best Picture.
No, of course not.
As Ridley Scott noted in that interview, it was very, very long.
he used some colorful language about that, but yeah, when Ridley Scott even acknowledged that cramming in so much stuff was probably bad.
Oh my, this definitely did not even come close to making its money back.
No. It's really sort of a charity at this point. I don't think they're going to make another one. And people should be a little concerned, I guess, because Denis Villeneuve is going to go on to do Dune now, which I can't get you to watch the David Lynch version, so I don't even know how you're going to sit through the Denis Villeneuve version.
Wasn't that literally our second episode?
Second or third, maybe.
We were still getting the hang of things. We were doing two movies per episode. I was a little overwhelmed.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to do a follow-up full episode on Dune, I will go back and watch it. I watched Donnie Darko, for Christ's sake.
Okay, well, as much as I appreciate that, maybe we'll save that for a special occasion.
Mm-hmm.
That threat.
Like one for cinematography, too. How great was that?
Yeah, and when I was referencing sometimes people win awards for past works as well as current works, I feel like that also probably, at least in the minds of some voters, played a role in them picking Deakins, because he's been up for so many pictures in the past and has been passed over. I feel like some people probably voted just on his name, like, oh, it's his turn. It's not in any way to denigrate the work that he did, because I think it was good.
Do you think there's another Deakins movie that's better than this one in terms of cinematography?
I couldn't name one, no. A lot of people were like, oh, look at all this stuff from Skyfall. It was so amazing. And it was like, why are you guys tweeting about that? Why don't you just tweet about like the movie he won for? So obviously
Skyfall was pretty, but yeah, I don't think it had the diversity of cinematography that Blade Runner did.
Yeah, I think film nerds that I seem to follow on Twitter were more impressed with Skyfall than Blade Runner 2049, apparently.
No, Sicario had nice cinematography and it really well served the story, but it's not better than Blade Runner 2049. There is that one really good shot, though, that everyone knows the shot. You've probably watched the GIF of the shot because you follow Todd, and it's a good shot.
Is that the one where it's really dark out and they're all like creeping around?
Yeah, they're walking down the mountainside there in silhouette in sunset, and then the way the camera cranes up and tilts down, the horizon stays the same, but the silhouettes of the people disappear into the darkness because they're secret stealthy people.
Ah.
Very well done if you watch it a couple times.
Cool beans.
Oh, he was a cinematographer on Rango. Nice. Rango's a good movie. I like Rango.
Does that count?
Well, he was a cinematography consultant is what it says.
Yes. Because I was going to point out, he was not handling a camera for that one.
Rango, that was made by the ILM's people.
Twas.
I like Rango.
I never saw it.
You never? Oh my God, it's so good.
Okay.
Gore Verbinski is weird, though.
I don't doubt it.
Did you watched Lone Ranger, didn't you?
Nope.
Oh my God, you have to watch the Lone Ranger. You have to do it. It's so screwed up.
It seems how should I put this? Repellent to me to watch it.
Well, yes, but not for the reasons you think.
Okay.
What reasons do you think it would be repellent, to use your word?
Johnny Depp as that getup that they got for him for that, specifically, to do that thing.
He's taunting.
It seemed bad.
Yeah.
Seemed like a bad thing.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not the thing that I complained about when I saw the movie.
Oh dear.
Not even close.
So it's worse than that.
It's just. It's so depressingly violent, and then it cuts to like Johnny Depp going like, doo, 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 look at me falling down, hit my head, da, 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 and like it's just back and forth with this just like horrifying violence, and then it's just like silly slapstick nonsense, and it's just like, what is happening? Was somebody taking his pills for some days and not the other days on this movie?
I don't know.
It's an interesting watch, but it's not a good movie.
No, thank you. As much as I enjoy
Armand Hammerhead,
no, hard pass. I also haven't seen what he was in that was actually up for awards in some categories, which was Call Me By Your Name. So I probably should do that, I suppose. But meh. And that concludes my deep thoughts on the Oscars. You have any deep thoughts?
I was happy for Deakins. Very happy for Jordan Peele because Get Out was dope. Well, you still haven't seen Get Out, have you?
No, but it's free.
Everyone publicly shame Joe for not having seen Get Out. It's good. Go watch it. Where's it free?
Didn't you say it was on HBO Now?
Maybe. Did I say that?
I thought you said that in the past.
Maybe.
I think past Dan said that. But whether or not it is, I do want to see the movie. Everybody says good things. So I'm happy he won, but it's from a position of not having seen it. So it's not an authoritative position to be in.
I mean, you know, Jordan Peele, funny guy, nominated for 3 Oscars on his debut feature film, won for one of them. How great is that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good movie, too.
Yeah. I mean, the bits I've seen seem impressive. Everybody reacts positively towards it. I don't doubt it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You should watch that.
Yeah, well.
We should do Oscar Roundup Month.
We did that the other year, and it was a pain in the butt.
Did we do that?
Yeah.
Which ones did we watch?
Remember we watched all the ones that were nominated for the Visual Effects Academy Awards?
Oh, right, right.
It's when we did Mad Max and... Yeah.
Yeah.
But no thanks. One thing that I thought was kind of funny, though, was that one of the biggest, most expensive pictures of the last year with a ton of visual effects in it was not nominated for anything or featured anywhere, and that was Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
That movie kind of came and went real fast.
Because it was bad. It's a horrible movie.
Did you see it?
I watched it on flight back.
Of course.
Yeah. But, well, and I don't care. Like, oh, you didn't get the best visual quality. It's like it could have wrapped my brain with a 3D image. It would have been just as horrible. There was an episode of The Flop House that came out like a couple weeks ago that I just listened to yesterday, and I was just like, oh my god, how could you all like this movie? It infuriates me. The movie infuriates me. Not.
I think
floppers.
I think I partook of what's it called, Jupiter Ascending, in the same way. You saw that one, right? Did we talk about that one?
Yeah, we did that one.
Yeah,
we have an episode about that. I Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. You should watch if you just want to like throw stuff at your TV and break it and buy a new TV, I guess. But
it's got that one guy who looks like a Batman villain, and it's got that that other girl. I forget her name.
The actors and actresses' names are not important. They have the charisma of a piece of wood, split between two people. It is a thoroughly unlikable film in every respect, and it stumbles in every single way you could possibly imagine a basic film could stumble, much in the same way Donnie Darko stumbled. Except even worse in some regards. It's just like the clunky exposition, things that seemingly mean absolutely nothing, and just like side journeys into wacky things just because it's an excuse to go do wacky stuff. And while some people may applaud all the wacky stuff, I can't. It is...
Is it wacky funny stuff or just like sci-fi stuff?
No, it's wacky, like Jupiter Ascending wacky.
I still think about some of the themes of that movie, and that I liked. What's his name? I know you hated him, Eddie Redmayne.
I'm gonna whisper like this because I'm supposed to be old, but I'm not because I'm Eddie Redmayne.
It was very old.
I can't deal with it. I need somebody to make good space operas, like good original space operas. Don't get your Viserys in a ruffle. I like me some Star Wars and stuff, and I like Star Treks and things, but just where's the new stuff? Come on. And I was deeply disappointed in every attempt we've seen to open up the stars to bold new things to do, because we've got out of that is Jupiter Ascending and Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. And if anybody wants to jump up here and defend those, I will point out that they're not making any more of either one of those. That they're singular creations, which are going to be placed on top of mantles as examples of things that should not be ever greenlit in the future. So don't laud those too much, because I still want to see stuff, and I don't want to see crappy stuff, and I want to see that stuff now. End rant.
Alien Covenant. Did you see that one?
I saw
airplane. You saw it on the airplane.
I think it was the same flight. The thing with that is that is a bad movie, and I knew it was going to be a bad movie. And it was a bad movie, but it was somehow worse than the bad movie that I thought it was going to be, which I could not have predicted. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to save all of my deep thoughts and feelings on that for when we get to that portion of the Alien franchise in our yearly Alien reviews.
Oh, are we doing that?
Yeah, remember we did Alien? We've every October we've done Alien, we've done Aliens, we've done Alien 3, and now next year, this current year, just current calendar year, we have the wonderful Alien Resurrection to look forward to.
Really looking forward to that.
Yeah, maybe we should watch Amelie or something right ahead of that, just so you can get the Jean-Pierre Jeunet. That's who it was, right? Who did both of those? We can get that going.
That was the same guy?
I believe so.
Oh my.
Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Yes, I was right.
I was going to check, but my IMDb is stuck on Blade Runner. I keep hitting the button and it's just showing me the cover art over and over again.
Yeah, Amelie 2001. Alien Resurrection, 1997.
That's the one that's yellow, and she does the thing with the basketball, and it is practical effect that they got the first take, but it looks like it's fake because the ball actually goes out of the frame.
Yes, because they didn't think that she would actually get it.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's a bad movie.
It's got Stranger Things mom in it.
Yeah, Winona Ryder.
She's like an android or something, man.
She's an android. It's a twist.
Oh, bro.
Spoiler. But we'll save all that again for October. And then after that, we have to decide how we're going to handle things like Alien versus Predator and where that fits into everything.
Alien Covenant reminded me a lot of Predators. Did you see Predators?
I did. Remember? I saw it, and I believe live tweeted my experience towards you, because you had seen it prior to me seeing it, and you were very happy that I was not enjoying it, apparently.
It's a bad movie.
It's really horrible. Why is Lawrence Fishburne in the movie?
I mean, you know, I like a little bit of Lawrence Fishburne every now and then, but.
Oh, no. Long grass and swords. They're not going to do the. Oh, wait, they did. They did literally the thing.
What else did you expect them to do? Wait, who made that movie?
So mad.
Adrian Brody is the leading man.
Yeah.
So great.
And your untrustworthy bad guy who is not at all obvious as a bad guy.
Topher Grace.
Yes.
I don't know how you pronounce this guy's name, but it's spelled Nimrod.
Okay.
Uh, There's an accent over the O. Nimrod?
Maybe. This is not a pronunciation podcast.
No. I mean, no. We use our mouths to pronounce things, but...
But we pronounce them incorrectly, so it's not a pronunciation
podcast. Oh, he did an episode of Wayward Pines.
How exciting for him.
It's a TV show.
A canceled TV show.
Yeah. Anyway, Donnie Darko.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, TM Trains is here. Hey, TM Trains.
Hello. Like... And on that note of one person signing into the chat room to discuss this movie with us, we will wrap this puppy up.
Mad World.
Mm-hmm. Mad World.
I have that song. I've had that song for a really long time. I didn't even really know it was from this movie.
That's why it exists. So, if anything, you can't be that mad at this movie because it gave you Mad World.
I don't really care for the song that much. I'm just saying I have it.
You just have it in your iTunes collection, mm-hmm. along with your hot dog flavored waters and your Rage Against the Machines.
Yeah, I paid for those though. I didn't pay for this thing.
Oh,
it was given to me.
Kazaa or LimeWire or
no? I think somebody made me a mix CD and it was there.
Oh, how thoughtful of them.
It was back in the day when, like, unusual covers of things were, like, super, super fascinating. Not unlike literally every movie or video game trailer now.
I just watched the trailer for Lost in Space, the Netflix version that's coming out.
I didn't know they were doing a thing.
Yeah, you should watch the trailer. It hits every cliche checkbox you could imagine, including the play the theme song or a song, basically, on a piano very slowly.
Yeah, very slowly. And then it's great when they do that, too, because they, like, really, like, overemphasize, like, most of the lyrics. And the lyrics are completely nonsense in most of these songs and completely non-applicable to the trailer that you're watching.
Yeah, it's a bad cliche. I really hope that goes away. Much in the same way that the Inception Braum thing has left us.
Well, it's shifted, right? Like, what did I just see? Somebody sent me a rough cut or a pitch or something that had one of the songs from Blade Runner 2049 soundtrack in it now. So that's sort of like weird droney like song thing that they've got in I don't know what, it's like one of the ocean-y songs or something. That's still around. That's gonna be around for a while.
Yeah, remember when the trailer for The Two Towers came out and they used the score from why am I blanking on it? Darren Aronofsky's
Requiem for a Dream. It's in like so many things. It's in so many other movies trailers.
It's in like all the movie trailers. But I remember specifically your boy Roger Ebert complaining. Howard Shore won an Oscar for the Fellowship of Lord of the Rings, and they can't even use that for the trailer. Blah 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 blah. He was crabby about it.
Yeah, I was gonna upset a lot of fancy space nerds on the internet, but when Last Jedi came out, everyone was, you know, of course John Williams does his thing, but the song that I remember most is from the trailer, which is not a John Williams song. It's a cool song, where it's just that it's like that slow like dun. Dun, 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 dun. You know what I'm talking about? It's in the...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good song. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, they're composers specifically that just do trailers, and they just riff on things. Mm-hmm. That's their thing.
There's that one guy who did the Mind Heist song for Inception. He did another song that Zach Hemsey something? He's got a couple of cool songs for like trailers and like video games and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Music.
Yeah. It's very, very...
Movies.
I think you're supposed to say Mad World.
Oh.
Finish each other's...
Sandwiches.
Well, at least you got that one right.